Hi, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of Return of the ACK, the podcast from E92+. I'm your host, Neil Langridge, and I'm delighted today to be joined by Gavin Wood from Cyberlab. Hi, Gavin. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Well, if we kind of kick off, if you want to kind of give a little background about yourself and who Cyberlab are.
Sure, thanks, Neil. So, yeah, my name's Gavin Wood. I'm CEO of Cyberlab. Cyberlab is relatively new in the cybersecurity space. We started in May of 2023. Actually, we're a combination of three IT security businesses that we've brought back into the wild. So we've taken our expertise from Chess Cybersecurity, reselling products and services, and consultancy managed services. And we've taken our pen testing organization, known as Armadillo Cybersecurity Services, and our latest acquisition, Cyberlab itself. And we've rolled those into one cybersecurity organization. And we really felt that focusing and doubling down on cybersecurity is absolutely the right thing for us and the right thing for our customers. So forming that new organization, we've been doing that since May, and it's going really well.
Yeah, it's always exciting kind of launching a new brand out there. But as you say, there's a heritage of a lot of kind of organizations there already that have been working with you over the years that you've been providing cybersecurity services kind of from across that. So kind of I suppose the kind of, you know, one of the things of getting some different voices on our podcast is to get a perspective from a reseller and a solution provider like yourself. Kind of how are you finding the market at the moment? What are the kind of the big trends that you're seeing in what customers are looking for from in terms of both from a technology but also from a service provider perspective?
Well, I think that customers want the best level of protection, and we talk about what's driving that probably a bit later, but the customers want the best level of protection for their business. And I think there's lots of changes in the cybersecurity threat landscape, but we still see the predominant set of threats. Ransomware is obviously still massive, even though it's sort of more from ransomware to more of a data exfiltration model. That's still huge. There's still requirements for things like security testing services, absolutely, making sure that all the security solutions that you put in place are absolutely doing the job that they're supposed to be doing. And then also, the lack of cybersecurity skills. We always talk about cybersecurity skills shortage. Having partners that they can work with to provide that extra level of kind of trusted advisor status, and also maybe managed services wraps on top of those. There are some things that we're seeing at the moment. So there is a big shift in the industry moving from, way back in the day. I always say, we originally had sort of antivirus and AWS endpoint protection. We had next generation endpoint protection. And now we're sort of pretty much in the something DR space, the XDR, MDR, and EDR type services. And that's really where we're at in terms of minimum level of protection for businesses, I think, at the moment. So we always see that kind of arms race between, the stress actors and where businesses need to be, the cybersecurity companies are. And that bar is constantly being raised. The more we raise the bar protection, the more threats for extra pricing and the more complex they are. And that bar is continually raised. So I think what we're actually looking, businesses are actually looking for, is to make sure that they're able to deal with the risk that's being generated by threat actors, by ensuring that they've got the best level of protection for their business. I think really one of those drivers has got to be especially risk. Certainly as a board member, cybersecurity breach is number one on my risk register. And I think it should be, across major businesses within the UK.
Yeah, and I think having that move to like the kind of XDR and EDR services, is that, I mean, obviously it's always it's an ideal situation, but you're seeing organizations now beginning to kind of move from a more reactive mode to a more proactive mode when it comes to kind of shoring up their cybersecurity defenses and ensuring that they're as protected as possible.
Absolutely. We went through way back in 2017, or it feels like way back in 2017, we went through one problem. All the problem was, ransomware, locking you out of your machine, businesses grinding into the holes. The impact was huge, but the impact is very, very evident. You get hit, your machine's locked up, you've got to do something about it.
Yeah.
With this more kind of nefarious kind of exfiltrations like model, the low and slow type attacks, people being within a network, looking at how they're going to exfiltrate the data, switching off all the controls, being you know, being part of that infrastructure and going undetected is a real risk. And I think you can't just have a sort of thing react to say an encryption event and stop it happening. Because actually what's going to happen is before you know it, the data will be an actual trade from the network. You know, you'll never get asked to pay off for that. And the only way to do that really is being proactive. And there are ways of doing that. You know, if you've got the skills in house, you know, EDR, XDR factors are absolutely where, you know, kind of where minimum standards should be now. But they are a set of tools that require, you know, a level of expertise and an infinite amount of time for you to actually be able to do properly. If you've got a line to anticipate, you know, you need to be dedicating the time to using those tools properly and get the value from what you do, the people you're investing in. But alternatively, the MDR type technologies, whether being outsourced to the big providers, and will actually add that layer of client protection onto you. Therefore, you've got, you know, 24/7 proactive monitoring and looking for this kind of insider threat, these long-term, low-side attacks that would normally go, you know, undetected, really. And I think, you know, back at the back end of last month in February, that kind of the UK National Crime Agency shut down Lockbit in combination, I think, with the FBI. You know, Lockbit being, you know, one of the biggest, you know, ransomware data exfiltration gangs out there. You know, huge. You know, they have affiliate programs. You know, for offering their products and service. You know, they were shut down, but they were shut down, and they were a huge, multi-million-pound organization, operating, you know, ransomware and that sort of thing as a service. And they're not the only ones. You know, there are lots of those organizations, and given the mass media involved, those things are only going to get bigger. So, you know, being proactive against an organization that's well-funded, that's generating a lot of money, is absolutely key. And I think being proactive is the only way that you're actually going to be able to secure your organization.
Yeah. And kind of on that note, there's always seems to be kind of, there's a two different perspectives that a lot of vendors and technology companies kind of approach, in terms of either you need to protect, you need to work on a basis of, not letting anybody in, or it's a case of when. So, but you know, and those are kind of those two different approaches that technology vendors take. But what's the perspective that you're hearing from customers? Do customers mostly assume, organizations assume, that they're probably going to get breached at some point and it's how they react? Or are they working on the basis of, no, we're going to assume no breach, that protection against anything that could happen is absolutely kind of, you know, that's our red line that we're working towards?
And I think there's a little bit of a shift, and I think there absolutely shouldn't be a shift to assume that at some point there's going to be an attempt to breach your infrastructure. And that might be automated scans that continue happening, looking for weaknesses in your infrastructure. You know, if you're not doing what I would call doing the basic trial, you know, patching your infrastructure, making sure you've not got anything obvious, then you're much more likely to be hit by something that's pay and spray approach, right? So looking for anything and taking a massive something that can be easily exploited. But actually, as organizations are getting more mature in their cybersecurity posture, then it's more difficult to find entrances into the network. And that's when we start seeing this much more targeted approach. And it's the more targeted approach, which I think is a bit much more worrying. Businesses really do need to be aware of the serious consequences that can happen if there is a cybersecurity breach. There's one thing that's long that sticks in my mind, and it's a company that I actually know of. I think they're called Mike Spall. They're Northamptonshire based logistics firm. And the reason I remember it is I used to drive in one of my former jobs back and forth and see their buildings and size. They're quite a sticky delivery. But they were hit by a ransomware attack, and that's destroyed the business. You know, the business is folded. 730 employees made redundant. They were hit by a ransomware attack. They weren't able to recover. The business is gone. And that's not a small business. That's quite, you know, that's a large business. And I think, you know, you've got to be aware of the potential for not, you know, getting the cybersecurity cost right, but also the follow on from that, you know, making sure that your backups are good, they're tested, they're in immutable storage, you know, you can restore from them. There's so much to think about. Again, there, you know, very much a risk. It's got to be, you know, on your boards, on your boards risk register is a really, really high price of risk, because you might think it's not going to happen to you, but it can. And when it does, it can be devastating.
That highlights that, you know, when you see all the stats, it's very easy to know the stats and see the numbers and everything. But when you see the reality of a business like that, that's when it kind of really, really hits home. So one of the points that raises up is, as cybersecurity has become more important, it's become more prominent. Are those discussions now where cybersecurity, as much as technology, is part of business strategy? You mentioned risk. So, you know, business continuity, risk to the business in terms of normal things we'd think about of kind of disasters or flooding or fire in a building or whatever. But is cybersecurity absolutely in that kind of conversation at the C level as part of an organization's overall business continuity and strategy?
It is. It certainly is in our business. And when we talk to our customers, they are aware of it. Again, I think it depends on, you know, it depends on the risk profile of the business. But there aren't many organizations now that can't operate without some form of IT infrastructure. You know, you may have a small business that you can continue to operate should your IT go down. You might be able to use phones, you like manufacture and it can function. But the reality is that it pretty much now, you know, with operational infrastructure, IoT, you know, your machinery is probably going to be connected to some sort of network. You know, it's very difficult for businesses to function without that. And I think, you know, that risk profile is so important. You know, what am I going to do if I have a cybersecurity breach? You know, I'm going to get potentially bad reputation. I'm going to get a potential fine through GDPR from the ICO. Are people going to want to train me? Are they going to want to trust the work we're going forward?
Yeah.
And we're even spending a little bit about how cyber security breaches and attack actually go outside of what we traditionally cast as things that you look at from a risk point of view. So, you know, people are very conscious of their, you know, their ESG, how they're gonna focus on ESG within their business. If you take kind of an extreme example, if you've got a loss of means for something that's a cyber breach, it leads to something that causes environmental factors. They're not just breaching their cyber security, they're not just breaching firearms, they're actually affecting the environment.
Yes.
And breaching their kind of environmental credentials as well. So it goes, it actually extends much wider within the organization than some people traditionally think. I think it's really important that you take into account all the aspects of what could happen to your business in the event of, you know, a serious cybersecurity attack.
Yeah, and it's something that's kind of come up. I've seen in the news, kind of a couple of people started talking more about ransomware payments. It's interesting that, again, what are your customers? Do they all have a position on that as to whether you should pay for ransomware? I said, but obviously, kind of, I don't know. Are you able to share? Do you know if any of your customers have actually paid historically for ransomware, or have you seen that from other organizations you're not working with, where people say, yeah, no, we did, because the example of the business you gave, people went, well, no, we're just going to have to pay the money because we need to get back up and running, and that's the only option they potentially had.
Yeah, I've seen both sides of that. I've seen organizations that are happy to hit, they're well protected, and there's no way they're going to pay the ransom. You know, they can resolve from back up, they're not really worried, they get back up and running. But we have seen organizations on the other side of that. And, you know, for me, that comes back down to incident response planning. You know, how are you going to deal with an incident should happen? Again, it's not the if, it's the when it still happen.
Yeah.
Having the great incident response plan, knowing that you're going to call, once your machines are down, who do you call? What's the big red button that you push to actually make sure that, first of all, you stop the situation, you stop it getting any worse. Then you're able to assess the email and make sure you can restore your backups, you know, if that's a possibility. And then also potentially enter into ransomware negotiations. Now, that's a specialist still doing this thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, we work with organizations who have gone to ransomware negotiations. Obviously, they have on the hand the needs of response planning, disaster recovery planning and testing that enables them to get back up and running. And they've had to enter into, this ransomware negotiation. And that's a very difficult conversation to have. Certainly, you know, at a board level, that's going to cost you a lot of money, regardless of whether it's the initial amount or something that's been negotiated down.
Yeah.
It's still a large investment. But unfortunately, the horses were revolted at that point. You are where you are. If you can't function, you've got to do what you can to get your business back up and running. I think that you know, from a business point of view, the thing to do is step back and actually look at what that potential investment would look like, or what potential payments look like, versus, you know, how you're going to respond to that, and know what it's going to do and get that evidence, and actually clearly budgeting for that beginning. It's a very difficult thing to do for some organizations, because it's a large amount of money is potentially not spent. But again, depending on your risk, you know, are you prepared to accept the risk that my business might, you know, come to an end, it might fold, you know, in worst case scenario.
Yeah, and it shows the importance of how that cybersecurity is part of an overall business strategy is so fundamental. And I think the two words that we're seeing more and more are risk and resilience. It's not just about IT. And you can have that position of, we're going to work on the basis that we're not going to get, you know, we're going to defend and we're going to protect and we're going to assume that we can do that. But we also have to be able to plan for the eventuality of it not happening, because as you say, if you haven't got those plans in place, if the worst does happen, then the potentially catastrophic effects could be significant. And then that also kind of ties in with compliance, because we're seeing definitely an increase in the amount of legislation and compliance. Are you seeing that helping the businesses and customers to kind of make sure that they're aligned? Do those frameworks help them, or is it just making everything even more kind of complex and adding kind of additional layers of complexity where they don't necessarily need it?
I think as a driver for IT security compliance, absolutely has its place, and it also, I think, depends on what it is you're doing and why you're looking at that level of compliance. So I think, yeah, we've still played for a long time now, but GDPR is a huge driver for level compliance. And again, it's not just this, it's not just IT, but it's making sure that you know who your data processes are. You know, if you're signing up to a new service, you know where your data is being processed. If you're taking lots of customer data and you're processing lots of customer data or PII data, you, again, going back to what we said about risk, your risk is much bigger in terms of GDPR compliance and legislation. You know, are you doing the DPIAs to your suppliers? Are you looking at supply chain security? You know, do you have a dedicated DPO? You know, do they know what they're doing? Are they someone who has core training in and understanding all the nuances and the legislation around what DPO actually means, or if that's just something within the organization you kind of get left to, or are you know, outsourcing that? And that's a really good option for some organizations, as actually outsourcing that expertise in the same way that you would do your kind of cybersecurity expertise. But I think there are a number of standards that are coming in, well, not coming in, but are ready or start. You have got that, you know, the Cyber Essentials Plus. You know, every business you might be in the UK should be, you know, working for Cyber Essentials Plus. And the reason being is because it gives you that baseline of, am I doing the basics right? I said it earlier on in the call, and I'll say it again now. If you're not doing the basics right, if you're not patching your infrastructure, if you've not got endpoint protection across your estate, if you don't know what IT assets you're actually managing, you will have a problem. And you can spend hundreds of thousands of pounds on the best IT security solution, but if you've missed a bunch of infrastructure that you don't know about or that you haven't patched, that's where you're going to get. That's where you're going to get hit, or that's where you're going to have an issue. So you know, these sort of standards, and although some people might think, you know, they're not necessarily, you know, you go to a high level and you certainly have all of those, they are the building blocks of a good IT security posture. And certainly I think every business in the UK should be working towards, certainly some essentials plus, getting the basics right. And on top of that, you can then start building up. Once you get more mature, you can start looking at your ISO 27001, the NIST, the MicroTech frameworks, that you can then build a much more mature security posture on top of. But I think, you know, getting the basics right, and I think that's where compliance should be driving. You've got to make sure that you're protecting your data, that you're not exposing your business and you're de-risking, but you've got to make sure you're doing the basics right. And I think there are levels of standards that can help with that. Certainly 27001 is something that we do internally, to also have our customers with, but there's a big part of that which is all about backup and resiliency and DR testing. You know, and we encourage our customers to test their infrastructure periodically to make sure that if there is an issue, you can steer it up, you can access the data, and it's really genuinely going to work. Yeah. You don't want to be testing it when you've got an issue, because you can see it won't work, and you've got no way of fixing it.
No, so I mean, that
compliance with private standards.
Yeah, that's always one of those challenges, though, is actually doing the testing and the verification. And that's a lot of what the standards are as well. It's not just it's the tech, it's actually the strategy and the processes in place to be able to do all of that. And I suppose that's one of the challenges that, you know, kind of mentioned at the kind of, you know, earlier on about helping customers kind of with their budgets. You know, there's a lot that they want to do, helping them kind of, I suppose, do more with less. You know, do organizations often necessarily have the time? Do they prioritizing that testing and verification of everything we're doing? That's quite a time consuming overhead. And I imagine that's one thing that probably is more easily missed off or put to one side that can get done tomorrow, because everybody's just busy doing their jobs in the first place.
Yeah, it is. And you know, doing more or less is what every organization really wants to do. You know, we squeeze on budgets. Everyone else to get the most out of their investment. And actually maximizing the investment in the tech you've got is incredibly important. What you want is to get your biggest bang for your buck. You know, if you've got a solution, make sure you're using it to its fullest potential. And then you're not just buying quarter solutions to fix this one and fix that problem, or here's a shiny toy over here. You know, you can have a single tool set which actually covers 90-80% of your infrastructure. Make sure that tool is, you know, is being well managed, is well implemented, is deployed where it needs to be, and then it's well run. That's something that will give you the most, you know, the best bang for your buck. You'll make sure your infrastructure is well managed. You know, you'll have less systems to actually manage. You'll be always looking for kind of a single pane of glass solution, like
there is, that covers everything in terms of IT security, but you want to reduce that product set, because you'll need less people to run it if you're running it internally. Or if you're going to a managed service provider, again, your cost will be lower because it's a smaller set of solutions you run. Because you really want to be demonstrating that for you, back to your business, clear ROI on these solutions. And sometimes that's very difficult to do in terms of looking at the risk profile and potential for breach. But actually, you know, if I've got 10 tools or I've got 4 tools, the ROI is going to be smaller. It's going to be greater on the sheer number of tools, because only less people do it. And a service provider can do it more cost effectively. So I think there is certainly a driver to get the most out of the toolset that you're using. And I think that's one thing that we like to talk to our customers about, is how are they maximizing the investment? You know, if they're using a toolset, have they taken the right parts of that for their business? You know, are they using assets to the fullest extent? You know, can they reduce one item steps down to another to free up funds to increase their security somewhere that's probably more appropriate. And so there are lots of ways that we could help our customers, talk for customers about doing that. And that way, if they're freeing up time and they're freeing up funds and they're creating the ROI, then they can spend that extra, hopefully, on doing things like backup and restore testing, the core parts of the infrastructure that your IT team is responsible for.
Yeah, I think that's one of the kind of real interesting questions, I think, for organizations on how they manage ROI on their cybersecurity spend. So kind of, you know, what are you seeing from customers in terms of how they want to be able to do that? And kind of, I suppose, what questions are they asking themselves? And also kind of what questions are they asking you in terms of how they can track and measure what is, you know, what is effective, what's working, and as you say, maybe what isn't working, where they can reallocate resources and funds to somewhere that might have a greater impact.
So one of the biggest areas at the moment is as touched on earlier, is the moving from the running everything in house, having to have lots of experts on those tools to moving to either a managed service or an NDR staff service, where actually, you know, I need 5 heads to run this tool to actually run it properly across my estate, because I need people here 24/7 if I'm going to do it properly, because I'm threat hunt, you know, whilst I've got people sat in front of their desk, if they're only sat in front of the desk from 9 until 5, outside of that, no one's going to necessarily be doing that active threat hunting. And, you know, as we see the lowest ransomware attacks, they happen, you know, at the edges of the weekends or every week, where there's going to be less eyes on the systems. You know, so actually, you know, we can see a considerable amount of ROI for, you know, lifting it that type of approach. So managed services, I think, is a really big thing we could help with in terms of customer infrastructure. So, you know, moving that expertise with the RASI, making sure that they've got the eyes on the systems, like systems are being cracked, the systems are being well run from a third-party point of view. I think that is a way of not necessarily increasing your IT capacity internally, but actually, again, doing more with less. So if you free up the time from those people, we can actually spend our time doing other things. I would say managed services is an absolute pillar. NDR to our services is a malware as well. So moving to those, structures is probably the biggest way we demonstrate our ROI to the customers. We've also moved away from, over the last few years, we've been moving away from the off-premise infrastructure to SaaS platforms. So the IC vendors are above all SaaS integrated. There's very few that are actually now ready for on-premise systems. So actually migrating those off-premise services to make sure you're thinking of our SaaS infrastructure. In terms of licensing, from a vendor point of view, it might not necessarily be any more cost effective, but actually if you don't have to run the infrastructure that supports them, it cuts down on your IT costs, cuts down on your IT spend, cuts down on your infrastructure, and then releasing files essentially be used to do things like the software we were just seeing.
Yeah, I think it's definitely introduced a greater level of flexibility, especially that kind of move to the cloud and move to services. Are you also seeing more organizations kind of wanting that flexibility to be able to kind of go up and down, being able to look at kind of more, treating some of the technology more as a utility, in terms of things like kind of consumption-based monthly payments, all of that sort of stuff, because, people don't need to buy a kind of big piece of tin and pay it off over and buy it for 5 years and, perpetual licensing. That has all changed. So, organizations kind of, customers really embracing the potential of having a more flexible approach to it, or is there still a little bit of nervousness? Because obviously you guys, I know, work a lot in public sector, and there is a kind of like, you've got your budgets, you've got to go and buy the stuff.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There is a big shift to the consumption-based billing model for ISV services. And you can go to a service provider, you can now say your hardware, your laptops, your mobile phones, your mobile phone contracts, your 365 licenses, your security licenses, and you can set those a lot of amounts of money. We provide what we would call MSP-style billing, consumption-based billing for pretty much all of our products. So customers can say they know how much it's going to cost. There's no big CapEx expenses, at least OpEx. It helps offset. And that is a big trend in the industry, and, everyone's paying for everything. Even at home, you do now, don't you? Everything is monthly. There is a big shift to that. We can absolutely support that. I think there are advantages to customers, certainly with some of these, with some of the bigger IT security solutions, being able to do that on an MSP style billing basis is a lot of flex. And again, they can have the advantage of flex up, flex down as well, depending on their business needs. But you're absolutely right. I think in public sector, we have a huge footprint. We work with a lot of public sector organisations. Their funding cycles are slightly different. So it's more of a we're looking for a 3 to 5 year view, and this is going to be our allocation. But actually, the last time we see some public sector organisations bringing that down to a year at the out. Because it allows, they're not sure what their budgets are going to be in 3 to 5 years' time. And if they spend it now, they won't have to spend on things that are actually, more important to that, maybe that organization. So again, in the news in the press this week, or even today, actually, we're talking about the, real STEM cuts in terms of NHS spend.
Yeah.
When we talk to NHS organisations, and their entire organisation is facing a real term budget cut, it's difficult to make sure we're presenting or proposing, but cybersecurity has to be part of that. But obviously, funding for things that are really important, beds, doctors, nurses, has to be fit in there. The cybersecurity vendors, the vendor space, also going to merit that challenge as well, and working on aggressive pricing in public sector NHS to allow us to support those organisations, which funnily under the bins on Asia, I think it's incredibly important. We need to come up with that balance for those organisations to enable them to achieve their kind of cybersecurity goals and ambitions. Given the fact that some of those organisations have vast infrastructures with, they have challenges with legacy tech, they have lots of operational technology that they have to kind of deal with. So, they're getting arguably the biggest budget squeezes we're seeing in the nation, but they have some of the most complicated and mission-critical infrastructures to support. And I think, it's a challenge of, providers like ourselves and the vendors themselves to actually, kind of address that. How are we going to do that from a budgetary point of view? Giving them options in terms of being able to flex licenses, monthly payments, or 3 to 5 year deals where, we can take
we can do it. We can work out more aggressive pricing. There's lots of ways for us to approach that with those providers and those organizations.
Yeah, and I think giving them some of that flexibility is key, because it's just, you know, say that they are big, complex, and often monolithic organizations, especially in kind of, you know, in the public sector. But the reality of the threats is they are very dynamic, so they do need to adjust and they do need to adapt. And, you know, I think if we can all come up with the right models to enable them to be able to pivot and put their resources in the right place, then that's kind of, you know, that's really important. And sometimes, you know, we're all guilty, I think, of getting very excited about the latest shiny thing. And sometimes that latest shiny thing is actually really important and can help a lot of organizations, but it's easy for us as an industry to get distracted, you know, away from that when the priority is making sure that, as you kind of said at the top, organizations are just making sure that they're covering all of their fundamentals. Not everybody can have everything. That's the reality, I suppose. You know, your customers have to prioritize, because they can't literally cover absolutely everything, especially in the, you know, in the kind of current modern climate where budgets are being cut.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, for me, it goes back to that risk approach. What is the tolerance in my organization for risk of breach, or tolerance for being, you know, not functioning for a day, a week, a month, etc. You know, how might be to survive. Whilst the risk committee, or however you do risk in your organization, has understood that, I think that's what should be setting that priorities in terms of cybersecurity. From the security department, also working with a provider that can discuss that journey with you. So, you know, we're here now, we want to make sure we're as secure as possible. What are those steps that are going to be, they're going to get us where we are? So coming up with the program that, you know, but first thing we'll do is, you know, first thing I'll do if I was entering the organization to test my IT, which is what I've done in the past, first thing to do is test, just find out where the problems are, you know, look at what I've got in place, test it, and then finally go, work with the board, articulate those risks and the risk of business the way we want to get to, and then work with the quarry to come up with a journey, get us where we need to be. And that might be, you know, a combination of, you know, retooling, it might be, you know, maximizing investment here on this tool and dropping some over here, or it might be, you know, outsourcing some of those services to third parties to enable us to do things that we need to do within those constraints of projects are.
Yeah. And one thing I always find it a really fascinating topic. It's interesting to touch on, especially with some of those customers you have that have, I think we can safely say, a very kind of large and diverse employee base, on building a cybersecurity culture within an organization. Because, you know, the conversation that we've been had so far is, you know, the people that you're going to be dealing with and going to be implementing this, the IT teams, the cybersecurity teams, and maybe reporting up to the C-suite and the board. But everyone who has to deal with all of this, who has to kind of, you know, negotiate the VPN when they're logging in, everyone who has to kind of, you know, kind of work with endpoint clients, has to kind of deal with the authentication when they're logging onto their cloud apps, are all of the users themselves. And the public sector especially has got, as I say, a very diverse and wide-ranging workforce. What are you seeing in terms of organizations trying to make sure that they are building that awareness, they have a positive cybersecurity culture where people can you know, aren't afraid to speak up when they see something, where they can help be that first line of defense and not just the weakness? Kind of, what are you seeing in terms of kind of what organizations are kind of doing out in the, you know, out in the real world in terms of trying to make sure that they get all their employees to come with them on that journey?
Well, there's a number of things and initiatives that are currently going on. There's a lot of drive towards user education awareness training, and I think that's something that, again, every organization should have at a level, whether you do that at the point of induction or whether you do that as a program that goes on throughout the kind of life cycle of an employee with an organization. I think there should be an ongoing user education awareness training plan, and that could be, you know, through video, it could be through questionnaires, it could be through phishing simulation, that sort of thing. It's kind of almost not drilling it into people, but actually making people understand that there are cybersecurity risks and these are the things you need to be aware of. So we would certainly definitely advocate a program of educational awareness training, probably combined with some sort of testing program to kind of try and get anyone within that organization to a level where they actually understand that cybersecurity is important. And I would say that you know, when you're inducted deeply into an organization, it's something that absolutely needs to be included almost from kind of the start of orientation. You know, we as a business find that, you know, all understand that cybersecurity risk is important to our organization for these reasons, and everyone has to play their part within that. And it is difficult to do, especially when you've got a large, diverse workforce. So, cyberized most of the time across organizations nowadays. Yeah. Lots of organizations are looking at the zero trust, it kind of part of the SASE journey, but the zero trust part of that, you know, assume and breach essentially, make sure you verify everything. And that, you know, as opposed to moving away from the traditional, you know, VPN systems and how to sign this, that, and the other, where there's temptation to maybe get around those or become a bit blasé about all the things that you have to do in order to get onto the systems, and, you know, people try and come up with workarounds and all this stuff. It's complicated. So really making it easy, and that, you know, a good implementation and zero trust makes it easy. You know, make sure that you're signing in, you're authenticating, and then that machine is then, you know, looking at where it's based, what network it's connected to, and then how it's certain resources based on all of those things. You know, takes that onus away from the person. I'm also away from the IT thing to a certain extent, because it's automatic, and makes the journey for that person easier. So, you know, I would always, you know, positive approach to cybersecurity awareness training. And you talk about phishing simulations. I would always encourage an organization not to talk about, you know, the percentage of people that fail, but the percentage of people that pass, right? If you've got, you know, 95% of your organization that's passed, that's a really good stat. Okay, you can focus your education and training on the people that didn't, but, you know, it's a positive stat rather than we have 5% failure, and turning around into a positive security culture within the business. I'm lucky. I always find cybersecurity generally interesting. I really want even my organization and people like Wordley to find them interesting. It isn't for everybody, but having an understanding of the potential impacts to the business and organization they work for is really important.
Yeah, and you know, and I think when it comes to choosing cybersecurity solutions and architecting everything, I think making sure that it is a good cybersecurity approach and staying safe is the path of least resistance. That people aren't tempted to try and find workarounds, because that's when security isn't working for everybody. Because then it becomes not just an inhibitor on productivity, but also something people that try to get past and get workaround, which kind of pretty much undermines everything we're trying to do in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't want to be driving things like shadow IT and stuff that doesn't fit and doesn't work for what doesn't work within, you know, what it is you're trying to achieve. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So we're just kind of coming up to the end. It's been a really, really good conversation. One of the things I kind of not normally ask at the end is that kind of one thing to do, which you kind of covered in terms of, but if for organizations looking to do that test and that kind of testing and awareness and understanding of your estate, is that kind of pretty much the first place to be able to start to be able to get that understanding of what an organization kind of has before you can work out the best way to protect it?
Absolutely. If I was coming fresh into an organization, you've got to understand the right estate. You've got to know what's in it. You've got to defend all the rocks and all the looks and planets. You need to know what's going on. If you can't see it, you can't manage it. And it's the basis that you're not managing is the basis that will kind of combine you. So get the message right, understand your estate, and then build on top of that with, you know, another program that ensures you're doing the basics right. Once you've got the basics right, you feel you're really confident with that, make sure you test it, and then you can start looking at the much more complicated things in this framework, the WITRE Tech framework. This will really drive a really good security posture, but you can't build on those things unless you've got the foundations right.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's been absolutely brilliant and fascinating. Really appreciate your time, Gavin.
No problem. Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Simon.
Thanks everybody for watching. Don't forget to look out for the next episode. Always appreciate everyone kind of your feedback, like and subscribe. As ever, other than that, thank you, Gavin, once again, and thank you everybody else, and have a good day.